Welcome to the Evocative Exchange, where we meet with go-getters who have that X factor, a way of meeting today's challenges with bold and evocative solutions. We'll share what keeps these experts thinking, thriving, and feeling inspired in design, entrepreneurial life, healthcare marketing, and beyond. Today on the Evocative Exchange, we welcome Kim Scott and Trier Bryant, co-founders at Just Work. These two dynamite ladies are sharing innovative solutions to help organizations and individuals enact change and enable more just, equitable, and inclusive work environments. Based on the book, Just Work, Get It Done Fast and Fair, and that's it spelled with an S-H in the beginning, Trier and Kim co-founded a company of the same name, Just Work. With too little time to do their individual and joint achievements, enough justice, I say start Googling now as we unpack how their expansive education and experiences inform their approach to recognize and confront the different problems that combine to create workplace injustice.
I am so glad to be here.
Yes, we are so excited to be here with you. Thank you for having us.
I'm in awe of your work and the swiftness with which I was able to apply it to a real life situation. And I'm recommending our listeners buy the book, Just Work, to put this podcast into context, because we're just going to dive into the conversation without a life jacket.
You all are going to be salivating to buy the book at the end of this podcast, even if you haven't already bought it.
So Kim, then we'll start with you. This isn't the first time you founded a company after publishing a book with the same name. How did you come up with that formula?
As with all good things in life, totally accidentally, I realized after Radical Candor came out that no matter how good a book is, most people don't change their behavior because they've read a book. They want more engagement. And so I tried a bunch of different things. I did a failed software startup. I'm in Silicon Valley. So of course I built an app for Radical Candor. And I realized at a certain point that the whole point of Radical Candor is to remind people to put their phones away, look each other in the eye, and have a real conversation. And an app was kind of a value subtracting round trip for that. So we came up with a bunch of other ideas, a bunch of talks and workshops where we're really having conversations with people. And that worked well for Radical Candor. And Trier and I are now tweaking the model for Just Work.
Excellent. So Trier, you're the CEO at Just Work. Can you tell us how you and Kim connected and ultimately co-found and are leading this very timely startup?
Very timely indeed. Well, first, I have considered myself to be a diversity, equity, and inclusion practitioner for over 15 years. You know, I've dedicated my career to, you know, what's the correlation between organizational performance and how we treat our employees, like how we optimize for their performance to really make sure that we're getting the best of them. But we do that by making them feel really great and not having all of this noise and extra weight when they're coming to work. And so having done this for a significant part of my career and also been in a couple of different chief people officer roles, when Kim reached out for me to read the book and give feedback, and then we were talking and she was like, you know, I'm looking for a CEO as well. And I was like, Kim, I don't have time for that. I am too busy we are in the middle of COVID, right? We are in the middle of this racial awakening that's overdue that this country is going through. And I was working at a space company at the time when we were trying to, you know, launch rockets. And after I read the book, I went back to Kim and I said, we need to do this and we need to do this now. Because one of the things that's so powerful is if you think about whatever functional area that you're in, we have all types of frameworks for people to leverage, but when it comes to diversity, equity, and inclusion, most people want to do better and do the right thing, but they don't know what to do. And so Kim's superpower is taking those human nuanced experiences and breaking them down into practical and tactical things that, like you said at the beginning, Donna, that you can easily implement very quickly in your day-to-day.
I love it because I spent a lot of time in corporate America, and it was well before DEI was being recognized. but we had so much training. And I used to say, look, if this is a flavor of the month, then the people are going to take the workbook and they're going to throw it up on their credenza and it's going to get dusty. But if that's it's right. actionable and it makes sense and everyone's doing it, they're going to keep pulling out that material and like using it as a checklist. And so that's really how I feel about Just Work. I'm just wondering if you were to give the elevator pitch, right? Because you only have so much time. How would you flesh it out for people? What is the most important thing for them to know that Just Work the book and Just Work the consultation is about justice? And not just work. It's about just work, the other definition of just.
Kim, I'll let you do the book and then I'll do the company.
Perfect. Yes. So the idea of just work is that we need to distinguish between bias, prejudice, and bullying in order to know how to respond to these different attitudes and behaviors so we can fix the problems. And so that we can create the kind of work environment in which everyone can just work. Just work is about justice, but it's also equally as importantly about what is effective, what gets us the best results. And if we can't eliminate bias, prejudice, and bullying from the workplace, then nobody can do their best work and we can't collaborate. So bias is meaning it. Bias is not meaning it. Prejudice is meaning it. And bullying is being mean. And you need to respond very differently to each of these attitudes and behaviors. So if you observe these things happening and you want to be a good upstander, or if they're happening to you, or if you're a leader, how can you respond to them? And I think it's really hard. Very often we say nothing because we don't know what to say. And I want to end the default to silence. So if you think you're confronting bias, you want to respond with an I statement, which invites someone in to understand things from your perspective. If you think you're confronting prejudice, you want to respond with an it statement. So, and an it statement can appeal to the law, it can appeal to an HR policy, or it can appeal to common sense. So it is illegal to, it is an HR violation to, or it is ridiculous to. And we can give you some specific examples in a minute. Whereas if you're dealing with bullying, what you really want to do is use a you statement. You can't talk to me like that. And if an I statement invites someone in, a you statement pushes them away. So that's in a nutshell what Just Work is all about.
And you've just arrived at your floor. Elevator doors are opening, but do not worry because there'll be plenty of time to dig into this because I really have been impacted by bias, prejudice, and bullying as a triad through which to view this just work. And yeah. Already the term upstander, and we're going to get into that. I've already found myself in a position to end silence and to be an upstander. So I'm excited, Trier, to hear what you have to say about the company, right? Because that's where a lot of the learning's being pulled through.
Yeah. So the framework is, you know, very digestible for everyone. And what's so powerful, even Donna, what you just said, like I've been impacted by these situations. And so our own personal stories bring it to life. So what the organization, what the company does is that we can come into an organization and we can do keynotes and workshops to give you, you know, an understanding of the framework to the entire company so that you can use this shared language and vocabulary of how you identify these situations. And then more importantly, what do you do about it? But the real power of the organization is working and partnering with companies, with leaders. So one of the things that we always say is that inclusion must be inclusive. And Just Work takes the approach that, you know, we've all been in situations where we've been the person harmed, we've caused harm, we are hopefully an upstander, which is a bystander who intervenes, or leaders. But really drilling down into leaders, when we get into the specifics of what leaders can do in the organization to prevent these workplace injustices, is from occurring, that's where we really can come in and work side by side with leaders to really talk about what's the longer term strategy to overcome these injustices that happen in the workplace. So for example, if we say, one of the things we tell leaders is that you have to measure your bias. And this can be a little daunting for some. Kim and I are always laugh at the fact that we work with these tech leaders and these leaders of organizations that are so data driven. But when we come in and say, okay, let's measure the bias, everyone is so reluctant, right?
Right.
And so that's where the organization really sets ourselves apart about, we can absolutely come in and we want to educate on the framework and do those keynotes and workshops. But then what happens when the organization says, okay, we want to now dig deeper. And as leaders, what can the company do to continue to look at our people processes within the organization, hiring, promoting, terminations, developing, and how do we do better to create that equitable experience for all of our employees?
I think it's interesting, Trier, that, you know, over the past 2 years with the social injustice crisis in our country, what I've been finding is that people are trying to identify with a level of inequity that they can't possibly conceive, right? Like hundreds of years of history from ancestors and all these things. And so when you say that inclusion must be inclusive, how do you really bridge that gap, right? So that someone's example of you know, someone took my toy isn't put in the same level as someone's example of, I couldn't even walk across the street in a hooded sweatshirt. How does that work out?
Yeah, and it's really coming from a place of not just empathy, but then also compassion and wanting to, you know, step into action with change. And again, we find time and time again, most leaders and organizations want to do better, but one, they don't know what they're looking for. And two, they don't know where to look. And so that's where we can come in and say, okay, this is what bias, prejudice, bullying looks like. And then when you introduce power, that's how bias and prejudice can turn into discrimination, how bullying power turns into harassment, and how touch plus power turns into physical violations. Because when you can identify it and you know what you're looking for, then you can solve for it.
I think it's also so important for all of us to be in solidarity with one another in terms of solving these problems. I think it's important to recognize when someone has been harmed. Trier often says to me, you know, there's no point, you're going to tell me, you say it better than I do, but there's no point in comparing who's been harmed the most. What we want to do is we want to create an environment where harm doesn't keep happening.
That's right. We don't need to play this measuring stick of pain,
yes.
This measuring stick of oppression and who's worse and who's better. But it's also, you know, we also don't want to talk about how we heal, right? I'm not here to help your organization heal. We're here to understand what are the root causes of it so that you can actually disrupt these patterns of behavior, make the changes so that no harm is being done, so that none of your employees or no one has to heal from anything. So let's focus on the root cause, and then we don't have to think about the healing, right?
That's incredibly forward leaning, because the process of healing could be daunting, so daunting that corporate America isn't going to go there. And we never get started on sort of, you know, what's going to happen in the future. So I love that you start, you know, with the end in mind, right? A Stephen Covey concept. I think that's absolutely brilliant.
That's right. And one example of that is, I remember talking to an organization and they were like, we want to have these healing circles and talk to the women about what it's like to be the only women engineer on their engineering team or in their function, right? Like, it must be really hard. And I was like, or you could actually just go hire more women. I don't know, where do you want to spend your time, right? And so really thinking about, how do we get to the root cause? But again, what Kim and I have found is that most organizations and leaders don't know what to look for, and where to look, and you don't know what you're looking for. So if you're sitting there thinking like, oh, well, our company and our culture, we don't have bias, we don't have prejudice, we don't have bullying, that just means you don't know where to look and you don't know what you're looking for, because if you did, we guarantee that it's there.
And I think it's amazing that you do this through stories. And Kim, you told a story about your first day as an intern. And I so identified with that because I actually had the same thing happen to a colleague. I'd love to sort of hear you repeat that story briefly. And one of the things that you said that I want to key in on is that you still don't have a snappy comeback for what happened many years ago.
Yeah. So I was, picture me, this is like probably 1989. I'm standing by the elevator. I've got my shoulder pads going, my hair's in wings, and I'm 19 years old. And executive at this bank where I'm an intern walks up to me and asks me what my role there is. And I explained I was one of the summer interns. And he kind of looks at me and he goes, "Oh, I didn't know they let us hire pretty girls." And so this was definitely bias. If you have a question of whether it was bias, prejudice, or bullying, he was not actually, he had actually started the intern program to try to hire more women. And so it wasn't prejudice, and he wasn't trying to be a jerk. He actually thought he was being charming or something, and just a ham-fisted way. So it was bias. But of course I knew that, but I still had no idea what to say. And it's also really important to, you know, he did not intend any harm, but he did great harm, both to his own effort and to mine, because with those words, he exiled me from my home. I decided in the moment, I didn't know what to say, so I said nothing, but I made a big decision in that moment, which was, I was not going to build my career in my hometown. Wow. So of course I didn't know what to say. I was 18, but fast forward 30 years. Now I'm the author of Radical Candor. I'm supposed to know what to say. And I'm writing this book, Just Work, and I'm telling the story, and I'm trying to think what I should have said. And I still couldn't think of what to say. And so this is really important, because what I learned from what happened next is one of the things that Trier and I put into practice when we work with companies. I put it out there on social media, and a man who I was on a board of directors with pulled me aside later. And he said, "You know, I'm so glad you told that story, Kim, because I'm sure I've said stuff like that to the women who I've worked with. And I haven't meant harm, but obviously I'm doing harm. So I'm glad to know that." And he said, I'll tell you what you could have said that would have stopped me in my tracks. He said, if you had said to me, "I don't think I can work here because I don't believe you will ever take me seriously when you refer to me as pretty girl," he said, I would have apologized, I would have felt terrible, and I would have changed the way I was talking to you. And what I learned in that moment is that there is such power in practicing and talking about these incidents that happen, and practicing what you're going to say next time. Because believe me, people said stuff like that to me. It wasn't the last time I ever got the pretty girl comment or something along those lines. And it's also has been really interesting in the course of writing Just Work and the work Trier and I do with companies to hear how different people experience different kinds of comments, also bias, but bias expressed very differently. So one of the things that I learned, that's why I gave you in the elevator pitch, it was kind of long, but we must have been in a very tall building. But that's why I think this I, you, it is so useful. If you think Absolutely. What's coming at you is bias, you don't have to know what to say next. Just start with the word I, and then see what comes out of your mouth next. Because it's like, when you start with the word I, you're inviting someone in to understand things from your perspective. That's why it was so useful to hear from that guy what would have stopped him in his tracks, was for me to say exactly what I was thinking. I don't think I can work here because I don't believe you'll take me seriously. So, you know, just saying what's on your mind is, and when you are responding to bias is really helpful. Now, if it's prejudice or bullying, we got other advice.
I think it's so interesting. We could really spend the whole podcast on the I, you, and it statements. And when I hear what that gentleman wanted an 18-year-old woman to say, I hear that as a you, right? Because of what you're doing, I can't work here. And I think that he certainly would have said that, but he's not an 18-year-old young woman in her first internship. So yes. when when I was struggling with this, because I believe in skill building, and I thought everyone should practice, everyone should come up with like sort of like a baseline pat answer, an I, a you, an it. And so I came up with this. It doesn't start with I, but it is an I statement. Equality is what I admire most about this company.
Yeah, I like that. Although I would say in that moment, I was not feeling like I was being treated equally. So I might have reframed it to say, admire equality is what I want most in this company.
Love it.
Not what I'm getting at this moment. I think, though, it's dangerous. It's a little bit dangerous. When I was writing Just Work, people really wanted me to give them, to sort of give them scripts. And right. when Trier and I go in and work with companies, people want scripts. Yep. I think that's very dangerous because then you're not in the moment. You're not paying attention to how what you're saying is landing for the other person. So I think it's more useful to think about, this is what I believe in this situation I'm experiencing, and how can I respond most in a way that will be most effective.
Exactly. And so I'd love to hear from you, Trier, about what is the boundary setting or level setting that happens in a consultation with, you know, absent a script, of course. What kind of practice are people doing that helps them to walk away with this ability, I, you, it type statements?
Yeah, so the statements are giving, you know, not only if you've been harmed, but even if you are, you know, step in as an upstander, to give you that language or just that framing is really helpful. But I think what's even more powerful, and I'll use myself as an example, you know, Don, if you had asked me before reading this book, Trier, have you ever been bullied? I would say, no, I haven't been bullied. Have you met me? Like, I'm a previous Air Force officer, right? Like, no, you come for me, I'm going to come right back for you, right? And then I read this book, and Kim is like, bias is not meaning it, prejudice is meaning it, and bullying is being mean with the intent to cause harm. Now, outside of my basic training at the Air Force Academy, I really had this aha moment, and it forced me to really sharpen my own perspective on my career and my experiences. And I was like, wow, Trier, you have been bullied quite a bit. And I never responded. I never stuck up for myself, and I never engaged because, again, I didn't identify it in that way. And so what we actually find is after we do a keynote session or a workshop, we then, with some of our clients, come back and follow up with what we call brave spaces. And we usually do them a week after, and we usually work with the employee resource groups. So for example, if we do this session and then we can follow up with the Asian employee resource group at a company and then say, now that you have the framework and you have your own personal stories that bring it to life, let's have this conversation of what you've experienced with like individuals that sit at your same intersections and see the commonality, and like, what can we learn and what have we seen? And it is that feeling of, I'm not alone. I'm not the only one, but also this person, you know, acted in this way and stood up for themselves, or this person, you know, Kim has this fantastic part in the book that talks about all the ways to exit the organization, right? Like, don't forget to exit the organization. Like, what do you do, right? And so having those conversations have been incredibly helpful for the employees as well. On the leadership side, though, I think what has been most profound is, again, being able to break down and be very specific that leaders can do something to prevent or to, you know, diminish these inequities that happen in the workplace. So if you're dealing with bullying, how do we stop bullying from happening? Leaders need to implement consequences. Well, what does that look like? Well, you can have career conversational consequences, right? How do we remove that platform from someone? How do we get that obliviating bullshitter in the meeting to just, hey, you've had your chance to speak, how about others speak? You can have career consequences, which could be removing someone from a manager to an IC role, removing their resources, or exiting them from the organization. And then you can also have compensation consequences, you know, hit it where people hurt. That's their money. And so when leaders can start to think about the actionable strategies and tactics that they can do to, again, prevent these injustices from occurring, it becomes more realistic and we can hold leaders not just accountable, but capable of getting it done.
And so when you say leaders, Trier, I just want to differentiate. There's the power that gets added to the scenario. So are you saying that a leader has to be have more consequences because they have power? Or are you saying that we need to teach the leaders to have consequences for everyone across the board?
That's right. So we need to teach leaders, that we need to teach leaders in the organization that these are the solutions and the strategy that you can have to prevent these injustices from occurring, but to also be cognizant of what happens when power is introduced to the equation, because it changes something. So, you know, for example, I worked at a company once where there was a hiring manager that was interviewing candidates. And when we debriefed, the strongest candidate for that job was a Black woman, and she wore her natural hair out to the interview. But at the end of the debrief, the hiring manager said, well, I'm not quite sure that we're going to be able to move to offer with them because their hair is not professional and we can't put them in front of the business. A week later, we then found out that that Black woman did not get the offer. So that was a prejudice in that moment because that hiring manager believed that a Black woman wearing her natural hair out in the workplace was not professional. But because that hiring manager also had the power to make that hiring decision, that power then turns that prejudice into discrimination, and we did not hire that Black woman. So that is how quickly power can, you know, change a situation of prejudice into discrimination.
I love it. I love little phrases, prejudice plus power equals discrimination, things that people can remember. Now, just let me go back a little bit. And Kim, you may also want to jump in here. So let's say we are at the next level and we do have that power. Are the consequences different? Is the drill down different, or is it all the same?
So I think when you introduce, like, if bias, prejudice, and bullying are the root causes of workplace injustice, when you add power into the equation, then bias or prejudice plus power yields discrimination, as Trier just explained. Right. I would say power plus bullying yields harassment. And any kind of touch plus power, whether it's physical size or positional power, winds up yielding sort of physical violations. And so the harm increases exponentially once you add power to the equation. It is terrible in a meeting to experience bias or prejudice, but once you add power in, all of a sudden you don't get hired, you don't get promoted, you don't get a fair bonus. That becomes discrimination, and the harm increases. So I think as the harm increases, the consequences for the person doing the harm need to increase as well.
Without a doubt. That makes perfect sense. And like in my mind's eye, I'm super visual. I see like posters, like with all these little phrases so that people remember. And even if they can't think of anything to do, maybe they'll be able to say, hey, you know, that was power plus bullying. So let's look at harassment. Like, let's have a conversation, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And Donna, I want to come back to something you said earlier. It's so important that the people who are harmed don't bear all the burden of responding to this stuff. And so one of the things that leaders can do to create a better situation for everyone is something that Trier and I call sort of bias disruptors. And so there's three parts to a bias disruptor, and a leader needs to really roll this out on their team. The first part is a shared vocabulary. So Trier and I wave a purple flag. Other teams will say, yo, but words matter, but the important thing is that your team comes up with the words. If the leader imposes the words on the team, it's not going to work very well. The second part is sort of a shared norm and how to respond when your bias has been flagged by the bias disruptor. When someone waves the purple flag at you, you either say, thank you for pointing it out, I'm working on it, or thank you for pointing it out, but I don't understand. Can you
tell me
after the meeting?
Super positive, super forward leaning. Again, this is what I think is so powerful about what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah. And then the third part, of course, is a shared commitment. As Trier said earlier, if you aren't identifying bias in a meeting, it doesn't mean it hasn't happened. It just means either you didn't notice it or nobody felt comfortable pointing it out. And so at the end of a meeting, if no bias has been flagged, you got to go back and say, what did we miss? So this now, it becomes the job of everyone in the meeting to flag the bias, not only the person who is harmed by the bias. And the role of upstanders in all of this is just, it's crucial.
I really like spreading it out, the accountability, because again, knowing how impactful and harmful it is to the person on the receiving end, we really can't hold them up to that standard because they're trying to figure out what, you know, what's going to happen next. But if everyone in the room shares the accountability and two or three people step up, there's power in numbers, especially if the perpetrator is someone who's leading the meeting or someone that has authority over the other people. So it's a great framework. I do want to make sure we get to one thing. So Trier, early in the conversation, you mentioned your expertise in DEI. And recently, diversity, equity, and inclusion has been joined by belonging. So for a collective DEIB. And so having this expertise here on the podcast, I just would like to ask Trier, you know, how does adding the focus on diversity impact the situations you address at Just Work? It's now DEIB.
Yeah, I mean, Donna, I don't really care what people call it. It's just doing the work, right? But the thing that's so interesting is we continue to evolve with the names and the words. But what I would encourage folks to do is to go to a dictionary, because what I do feel strongly about is that they're not interchangeable. Diversity is not equity, is not inclusion, is not justice. Belonging, I think that we really started seeing that word. What I value is when you choose words that align with your values, it makes it personal, it's ingrained in your values, and it's intentional and purposeful. I think the first time that we really started seeing belonging is Airbnb leads with that, but that directly ties to their mission, right? Of like belonging. When you go into the Airbnb spaces, you have Salesforce that has, you know, their chief equality officer. But what that work does, what Tony does there, it encompasses all of this. So I don't care what you name it. I've seen intersectionality. I have seen, like, name it whatever you want, but actually be intentional and do the work and value this space and the work that needs to be done the way you value every other function in your business. What I challenge leaders and CEOs and founders to think about is when you came up with your idea in your garage, right, in Silicon Valley, and you were like, we're going to build a product. You went and hired engineers to build that product. And then you said, we need someone to PM that product. And then you went and hired product leaders. And when you were ready to sell that product, you went and hired salespeople. Yet when we think about diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging, all of that, we go, oh, who are the underrepresented folks that really care about this? Here, you all go solve that problem. And that is ridiculous. And so treat this space and this strategy as a business function that you would do with everything else, tie it to your bottom line and really get the support, whether that's expertise externally from consultants, subject matter experts, whether that is creating a leader internally. But if you don't hold people accountable, then the way that everything else is held accountable within your organization, you will not see change, sustainable change, and you will not you will not break the patterns that we need to break in the workplace to create these inclusive environments where everyone can just work.
Wow. I really appreciate that. And I'm Kim, you and Trier are really breaking new ground. And, you know, it comes to mind just from my corporate background that if this is really going to be sustainable, is it worthwhile to incorporate this type of skill building in an orientation so that every new employee coming into the organization?
Yes.
From the
get-go? Yes. 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 That's exactly what it is. At every point in your employee life cycle, it is absolutely, you know, I also tell leaders to equate it to, you know, I've heard some folks will say, well, we don't need a leader. Inclusion is everyone's responsibility. It is, but so is legal risk, but you have a general counsel. Like, there are certain things within a company that, yes, it is everyone's responsibility, but you, if you really care about it, you have a team and a leader that you hold accountable to make sure everyone is doing their job. When it comes to inclusion and equity, it's no different.
And I love the idea of training on your first day, but like, you've got to put these ideas into practice, not just by learning about it on your first day, but every day thereafter. That's why I love the bias disruptors that Triera and I are rolling out at so many of the companies that we work with.
Yeah, I'm jealous of the companies that have had the sense to work with both of you dynamic women. I think these are definitely, as I said, forward-leaning topics, and the company shows their commitment to sustainability for labor and human rights when they take this work on. And I know that our listeners are going to want to learn more about the book and about the organization Just Work. Can you tell me what should they do to get in touch with you or learn more?
JustWorkTogether.com is our website. You can follow, Trier has a better handle than I do. She's at Trier, T-R-I-E-R, and I'm at Kimball Scott on Twitter.
Absolutely. And the book is available on Amazon or local bookstores, wherever you get your books. So, you know, go buy the book and tweet at us, tell us what you think, or drop, you know, a message on our website.
You know, I noticed that there's an intake on the website. So if someone's experiencing an issue, they can write in and then, you know, just talk to you about, is that falling under what you do? I just think that's great as well.
There's a place for people to share their stories. Yeah, we love to hear stories. Kim loves getting people's stories.
It's so interesting. And you know, hopefully we can be helpful, but very often just telling someone your story, you're helping yourself.
Yeah, it's cathartic. So I just want to say that when we do the podcast notes, we'll put the link to the book and we'll make sure that we give those two contacts that you mentioned so people will feel free to learn more. And I want to thank you both again for being part of this podcast. And with that, we'll bring it to a close.
Thank you so much. Love the conversation.
Yeah. I wish
thank you.
Both, yeah, Trier and Kim, I wish you both the best of luck.
Thanks so much.
This has been the Evocative Exchange that explores people and businesses that have that X factor that keeps you inspired and focused on what's possible.